As our fire seasons grow longer, more destructive, and smokier, it seems like people are lining up to criticize forest management or fire suppression efforts, or both. There's understandably a lot of frustration mixed in with the sorrow over lost homes and businesses lost to fire and smoke. Our first guest this hour heads up an organization that has already spent some time examining and criticizing wildland firefighting efforts, and it's made up of wildland firefighters. FUSE is the acronym and handle for Firefighters United for Safety, Ethics, and Ecology. It recently issued a lengthy report examining issues with a particular firefight in California. Let's hear about that and the general approach at FUSE. Timothy Inglesby is the executive director of the organization. Thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
Oh, thank you.
So there's a reason your symbol and name are a FUSE, which is a flare. What is the reason?
Yeah, FUSE is our the little handheld torches that firefighters carry to light burnouts. They do backfires. They create safety zones, escape routes, and they also restore fire to the land. So it's kind of a iconic symbol of wildland firefighting, I believe, more than the air tanker dropping retardant. And it also symbolizes being a torchbearer, light, you know, shining the path, blazing the trail for a new paradigm in fire management.
All right, a lot of symbolism tied up in there then.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long has FUSE, the organization, existed, Tim?
We were founded in 2005.
Mm-hmm. And what was the original founding purpose?
The founding purpose was to promote public education and policy advocacy for this paradigm shift from aggressive fire suppression to ecological fire management.
And
in particular, we were working within the wildland fire community, mm-hmm. scientists and managers, educators, to kind of a pool and network of progressive thinkers to help the rest of public and policymakers get on board this emerging, unfolding paradigm shift.
How civil have you been able to keep? Because I'm sure you raise a few hackles when you come in and criticize fire suppression efforts, even if you're trying to make them better.
Actually, that's on the contrary. There's a lot of support. It really hasn't made it into the media, and especially in politicians, but the wildland fire community is quite looking forward to a shift in policies and practices and the way we respond to wildfires, the way we respond to fire in general. And so we provide, I think, constructive criticism, and we try to be the voice of those ecologically minded fire managers and firefighters that really don't have a voice that gets into the media or gets into policymakers.
Would you say that in the 13 years or so that you've existed, that there has been a bit of a shift in the approach?
Absolutely. In fact, we have profoundly progressive policies on paper that give fire managers an amazing amount of flexibility and discretion to do really good things with fire. The trouble is, it's just those policies on paper are not getting implemented in practice on the ground. There's still a lot of bureaucratic inertia and political pressure, public pressure to aggressively fight all fires, all times, all places, all costs. And, this cold, wet weather is a perfect environment for having a rational discussion of, you know, how do we deal with wildland fires.
All right, so that raises the major question then, because you point out that when people know that there's a fire out there, like last July 15th, when there were all those strikes around Southern Oregon and all those fires started, people wanted to know that there were crews on the mall, which, as we learned from fire managers, they couldn't staff them all, which is why some get to run for a while. Is that a good approach? I mean, let's start there.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest concern of people is fearing flames. Destroying their property, threatening their lives. And that's what we advocate, concentrating what are really limited suppression resources on protecting homes and communities. That's number one. You're protecting life, and that includes lives of firefighters. Protecting life, people's homes and property, that's number one. And that's where we should be concentrating our focus and priorities, not sending crews far out into remote, uninhabited wildlands, fighting fires in really the worst of conditions for humans to encounter and confront flames, and making sure that fire protection starts at home.
We are talking about firefighting in the wildlands and how to make it more ethical and ecological and safe as well. The organization is called Firefighters United for Safety, Ethics, and Ecology, FUSE. Timothy Inglesby is the executive director and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. If you've got questions or comments, let's hear them. Join us by phone at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So you list a FUSE triad: safety, ethics, and ecology. There's what the SEE is in FUSE. And you put a lot of quotes around terms in your literature, like wildfire prevention, hazardous fuels reduction, or forest health restoration. Do those quotes indicate you don't believe the practices live up to the terms?
Well, we spend a lot of time, you know, grappling with terminology, because that, you know, how we speak about fire, it kind of structures how we think and act towards fire. So even the concept of wildfire prevention, I mean, by definition, that's an impossibility, an absolute impossibility, until we can, you know, prevent all lightning, volcanic eruptions, et cetera, et cetera. Wildfires will happen. They've happened here for the last 800 million years. They're a natural process, and actually a vital process for many plants and animals who depend on recurring fires to their habitat needs. So instead of wildfire prevention, we promote wildfire preparation. And that's something that humans can and should do. And beginning, you know, at home, making sure their homes are less vulnerable to ignition. And it's not just wildfires, but prescribed fires, all kinds of fires. We can't prevent accidents either. I mean, we can attempt to, but accidents happen. That's why they're accidents. So, you know, everyone's got to be prepared for fire of any source, in any location, particularly given climate change. The wildfire activity is just increasing everywhere. So throwing more good money after bad, attempting to prevent all wildfires, is not only impossible, but it's really degrading the land as well.
So when people talk about forest health restoration, and you get quotes that range from effective management on one hand to, you know, let's rake the forest on the other. I mean, what do you make of all the things that people think should be being done to forests to make them at least burn less intensely?
Well, there's a lot of legitimate reasons and for restoring forests that have been degraded by past abuses, and it's past logging abuses, taken out the biggest, most fire-resistant trees. That's what made the most money. Left behind all the logging slash, and what grows in the wake of logging is other, even more flammable vegetation. Grazing has also impacted it, all the roads. Lots of things legitimately need restoring. But the best tools for restoring the problems associated with our past firefighting and past fire exclusion is fire itself. And where the wildland fire community, the progressive wing at least, is thinking is, in the future, we're going to be managing all wildfires like prescribed fires. And that means instead of just trying to hit them hard, stop them cold, put them out, we're going to be steering them into places we know need to burn, would benefit from burning, steer them away from places like homes and communities that cannot burn. And we've already mapped out what are the values at risk, the assets. We've run models that kind of tell us pretty much where fire is going to go and what it's going to do on a given day and set of conditions. And we're going to be actively managing wildfires with ecological objectives in mind. And that's where the future is at. That's where the fire community wants to go. It's just being constrained by, you know, these other external political and economic forces that kind of have vested stakes in perpetuating this kind of militaristic mentality and war on wildfire paradigm.
Tim, if we get to a more of a prescribed fire regimen and also making use of the accidental fires as prescribed fires, I mean, is it really the way some people have pitched it, that you're going to deal with smoke in smaller amounts at different times of the year rather than a whole bunch in the summer?
yeah, spreading the smoke out around is much preferable than just get it all in one fell swoop. I mean, really, I sympathize with people concerned about smoke. I live in the southern Willamette Valley. We are the sink of all the crud in the other, rest of the valley. We get smoked in, but, you know, smoke is another part of nature that, you know, there's really very few fire-free forests. There's no smoke-free fires. And it's by managing fire that we have the best means of managing smoke. Just try to do, you know, prevent all fires. Well, that's impossible, and then we're going to get all that smoke, for, you know, in one big wildfire. It, for me, the analogy is smoke is like pollen. And here in the Willamette Valley, I think we got world-breaking pollen counts every spring. I suffer horribly myself from hay fever. But no one would advocate cutting down all the trees and mowing all the flowers to prevent pollen in the air. It's something we just have to, you know, endure some ways. I believe that's the same with smoke. You know, we can provide for those people who are sensitive to smoke, get them out of the smoke in good air, filter their homes. We can other things, but it's just kind of part of the trade-offs of living in the, you know, beautiful forest that we live in. There will be fires and there will be smoke.
Timothy Inglesby is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the executive director of FUSE, which is the Firefighters United for Safety, Ethics, and Ecology. You can join our conversation on the exchange as we talk about wildfire management and preparation for wildfire with Tim. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, FUSE just issued this report of the Soberanes fire in California in 2016, called The Sky's the Limit, the Soberanes Fire Suppression Siege of 2016. Tell us about the fire and what's notable about the firefighting effort.
Well, what was notable is it was the most expensive firefighting incident in U.S. history. We blew $262 million on what was largely a wilderness wildfire. You know, that's the average is $2 million a day. At the peak, it was $5 million a day. 5,000 firefighters, just a whole armada of bulldozers and fire engines and air tankers, really just doing excessive amounts of damage to the land in futility. And it was just, you know, what explains it? We were actually tipped off about this by members of the fire community, just concerned that this is not sustainable. This backcountry firefighting boondoggle almost broke the bank. And, you know, annually, it's a kind of chronic problem of the Forest Service overspending on suppression and having to go to Congress for more money. And there really is no limit.
Was there something about where the Soberanes fire was that made it a more of a political thing for the firefighting agencies to work it the way they did?
Well, it did start by an illegal campfire in a California state park near Big Sur. And it did threaten homes and communities from the get-go. So CAL FIRE, the California State Fire Department, did aggressively attack the flames and did their best. There were about 57 homes that were burned and 100 or more threatened. But over time, that fire moved away from all homes and communities, moved into the wilderness, where it continued to kind of to creep around and burn for the next 3 months. And the Forest Service just kept aggressively attacking it as if it was still threatening homes.
Even in the wilderness area?
Even in the wilderness. So they ran dozers 20 miles into the wilderness, running them along these ridgelines that are, you know, very sensitive places, highly erodible, and left lasting scars in the wilderness. They did over 100 miles of retardant lines, which, you know, people are confused. They think air tankers dropping retardant, it drops it on flames and extinguishes them. It does not. They drop that stuff ahead of the flames. It's intended to slow down the rate of spread to enable crews to get out ahead and cut line. That's what contains the fire. So they just were dropping retardant almost indiscriminately without any crews there. Over 100 miles, 60 miles of retardant lines in the wilderness, and again, another expensive futility. So this was really a kind of siege-like suppression spectacle that wound up being a backcountry firefighting boondoggle. We really don't have much to show for all that money we spent. They were actually very lucky that they didn't get another late-season Southern California firestorm, when we really would have needed all that money and all those crews and resources to really protect homes and communities threatened by fire. They were very lucky that didn't happen in 2016.
Tim, I can attest to the fact that people with TV cameras love retardant drops from tankers. They're very dramatic. They're great footage. You can get them from pretty far away and not have to get close to flames. But as you refer to the air attack on the Soberanes fire, you refer to it as heavy metal suppression. Is it just that easy to use because it is a visual? It's a thing that tells people that something's happening?
Hate to say it, but this is widely known within the firefighting community. They call them political shows, CNN drops. They are great images at the nightly news, but they're mostly ineffective. And, you know, we've got studies done by Forest Service scientists documenting that these air tankers are being used at the wrong times and places and conditions where they're just, you know, a thrilling image, but you might as well be dropping dollar bills out the bomb bay doors for all the effect they have. What really has the most impact, most effect, boots on the ground, is crews with, you know, hand tools. They're also the most versatile, because what we really have to get away from is this reactive firefighting and towards more proactive fire restoration, fire management.
So you really want to see firefighters working all year round, it sounds like.
Absolutely, because there's a lot of work to be done. And this work is especially appealing to young bodies, strong and with endurance. And I mean, this is how I got my adult life started out. And it's, it had life-lasting impacts and good set of values. But it appeals to, young people who seek adventure and hard work and camaraderie and a mission, that really is caring for the land, serving people.
All right, the mission at FUSE clearly will continue. We have an email here from Susie in the Applegate Valley who says, thank you for having Tim from FUSE on to discuss the complexity of ecological issues in wildfire management. Similar to FUSE's work, there are fire reports by Klamath Forest Alliance that look at the local wildfires in the Klamath-Siskiyou region that can be viewed at klamathsiskiyoufirereports.org. So another person backing up what you're talking about. The work of FUSE continues. It's been going on since 2005. Timothy Inglesby is the executive director. Tim, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you.